We're about to talk to Hage Mattar, who is an Israeli journalist, political activist, who lives in the neighborhood and was covering what was going on when the demonstrations came up against the African refugees and was in the middle of it and was also attacked during that demonstration, and joins us now. And Hage, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
So where do we start here? I mean, I think, let me just, before we talk about the demonstration that night, that took place. You live in that neighborhood, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about the neighborhood.
Yes.
Who lives there?
Well, actually, it's a bunch of neighborhoods. You can say that a great part of South Tel Aviv, which is almost, I would say, like one-third or one-quarter of the city, is affected by this phenomenon of new presence of migrants or asylum seekers from Africa, who have reached this area from the last 4 or 5 years. So it's rather a large part of the city, and there are very important differences between the different neighborhoods. But on the whole, you can say that this is the poorer part of the city. It is where most immigrants live, and this is even before the African asylum seeker wave that we had over the past few years. Migrant workers and migrant Jews that come to Israel and settle in here before they can move on to better parts of the city. So it's a very transitional kind of area as it is, even before the new wave. So that's what how you get like this neighborhood, which is very, very mixed. You've got Palestinian collaborators. That were in risk of being killed in the territories and were brought out by the secret services and resettled in this part of Tel Aviv. And you have migrant Jews and migrant non-Jews and asylum seekers and the older, more veteran Israelis that have been here for many years. So it's a very, very mixed kind of area.
And talk about that night and what happened and who demonstrated and what happened. You wrote a very searing piece called How I Survived a Tel Aviv Mob Attack that you wrote last Thursday for Plus972, the online journal. To talk about what happened.
Well, firstly, we should say a couple of words about the background. The background is that all these people coming in over the past few years, mostly from Sudan and Eritrea, are technically allowed to stay in Israel. They are protected under UN conventions, and an Israeli is not allowed to deport them because of their asylum seeker status. But at the same time, while not deporting, Israel has decided not to give these people working visas. And thus, we have a very big population, a growing population of tens of thousands of people who are here, who are on the border of being legal, but have no social rights and have no right to work. So some manage to work like in a kind of black market kind of occupations, but many people are left unemployed, which causes a lot of people sleeping in the street and crime and so on. So that is a very serious burden on the local community, on the older community, which, as I said before, is already a more impoverished kind of community. And we have been saying and seeing for quite a while how these two mass communities are headed towards a clash. And that's actually what has been happening in the recent weeks. It started about a month ago with a young man in my neighborhood that went on a rampage of throwing firebombs at homes of asylum seekers. Quite luckily, no one was hurt, but it was a very, very grave event that kind of stirred emotion. And since then, we've been seeing more and more demonstrations saying very different things. And the specific demonstration we saw last Wednesday night was by a right-wing group, actually led by Likud people, the ruling party. People were actually organizing a demonstration which, instead of putting the blame on the government and talking about how the government should solve this very critical situation, they were attacking at first literally, verbally, and then physically attacking asylum seekers and blaming them for everything that's going on here. And so, as I said, it was a demonstration with members of Knesset speaking there, inciting the growing crowd. And eventually it burst by with some of the people in the crowd coming to myself and several other journalists and starting to blame us for being people who throw stones at soldiers in West Bank demonstrations. And from there, we tried to deny it. I mean, I do go to demonstrations, but I never throw stones. The other journalists don't even go there. But it was too late. I mean, the crowd was convinced that we are all these traitors that have to be eliminated, and we were just attacked by the masses, who then went on to attack any asylum seekers they saw in houses and shops, and then looting a very serious race riot that lasted for hours.
So, Haggai, talk to us from your perspective about the issue of race and racism within Israel itself, and how this played into this, if it did at all.
Well, well, it's a very serious issue, as the whole question of who deserves to be an Israeli citizen is based on the question of race, quite literally, as defined as a Jewish state. And then one asks, so what does Jewish state mean? And then you start arguing about who is considered Jewish. Would Jews accept non-Jews in their state? And these are the very core questions of Israeli politics. Now, historically, we've seen this as a question that had mostly to do with the relation between Jews and Muslim and Christian Palestinians and generally the Arab world in our part. And also a bit of a question within the Jewish community, who is like more Jewish or better Jewish or and so on, and who is less. And recently we've been seeing, due to this wave of migration and asylum seekers, the race discourse kind of shifted, looking at Africans as a threat. And you see and hear members of Knesset, of parliament, speaking out and saying, these people, the blacks, they carry disease and they are cancerous tumors in our society. I mean, these are the kind of things that you hear members of Knesset saying exactly in that very same demonstration where I was. That's the kind of thing you hear people saying. So race is definitely an issue.
And so, I mean, we heard some of the people from Parliament talking about, you know, calling the African refugees cancer. And there's also been this kind of talk about the crime that African refugees have been committing against Israelis. But I don't know if you can, but one of the articles I read recently about that right after the riots against the Africans was that actually the crime rate among African refugees is lower than the overall Israeli crime rate.
Yes, that's apparently true. I mean, we've been having a very serious political and media kind of discourse and struggle about these very figures as the same figures, which are kind of old there, but like 1 or 2 years old, are shifted and like juggled around with by different people showing, yeah, there's a lot of crime in this area. And then someone else says, yes, but part of it is by Israelis. And then like it's kind of a question of who bends the fingers in what way. But it would seem, and there's a research center within the Knesset, and that center has shown that, or has argued, that the crime rates among asylum seekers are actually lower than within the general Israeli population. But that doesn't really matter for people in the south of Tel Aviv, because and also in the media, because you can hear about a rape on television or read about a rape in the papers. But when it would be a rape committed by an asylum seeker, that would get a bigger headline. They would stress the fact the rapist was African. And then like the image, the popular image of who is like raping our daughters is of these frightening, barbaric Africans attacking our country. And that is kind of the popular notion, regardless of the figures and the facts.
So tell me where you think this goes now. I mean, because we've seen stories that the Israeli government would like to, people are calling for like almost a mass deportation.
Well, I think they know that they can't promote real mass deportation. I mean, they have been arguing about whether or not to deport people from South Sudan now that South Sudan is a recognized state. So there's an argument whether or not it is a viable state and people can actually go back there safely. But anyway you look at it, we only have about less than 2,000 people from South Sudan out of a population of more than 50,000 asylum seekers, and most of those from Darfur in Sudan and from Eritrea cannot be deported. So that is not an option. What the government is talking about is closing the border and stopping people from coming in, and also building a mass kind of work camp that would kind of imprison people in and not allow Africans to wander around the country freely, just stay in that camp, that area, and work. And that would be kind of supposed to be the solution that the government is offering. That place is under construction. It's not been opened yet.
We've been talking with Haggai Matar, who is an Israeli journalist and political activist. His writing can be seen in many places. One is the Plus 972 website. It's 972mag.com, and we'll have that on the website as well. Joins us here from Tel Aviv this evening. Haggai Matar, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you taking your time with us.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. That was our interview with Haggai Matar that we did earlier today, an Israeli journalist who was in Tel Aviv in the neighborhood where the riot took place, where he lives. And it's something that caught our attention last week because we've been talking a lot about race in America. We've had a lot of conversations in this studio over the last weeks about Jewish-black relations in the United States, in Baltimore. It's something we've been covering pretty intensively over the last 19 and a half years of this program, on both in Israel, Palestine, and here in America. So we thought it worth the conversation, as did our guests. That's why they're here. We'll also, I'll hear from Johannes Bayou, who we interviewed earlier today as well. He's executive director of the African Refugee Development Center in South Tel Aviv in Israel. And what this is, some people might say this is a flash in the pan. It's not that big of a deal. Others would say that this has to do with Israel struggling about its identity, who it is, what it is. It has to do with race. We have with us here in the studio Rabbi Jeff Basik from the Kol Halev congregation here in Baltimore City. Good to have you in the studio, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
The Reverend Heber Brown III, who is pastor at the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church here in Baltimore and an organizer of the African Heritage Delegation, to Israel and Palestine. And Reverend Heber Brown. Heber, good to have you in the studio. Welcome.
Thanks so much, Mark. Appreciate it.
And Jay Bernstein joins us by phone. He's a radio talk show host, Shalom USA Radio, and chair of the Baltimore Zionist District's Israel Advocacy Committee. And Jay Bernstein, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Mark, thank you for inviting me.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Log on to our Facebook pages. Make your comments known there, or you can write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. So I just begin with what this means. I mean, it's in the context of what happened last week. The comments made, which we'll talk a bit about, by some of the members of the two ruling parties in Israel, both members of Likud and Kadima. Actually, one made today, the latest comment today, that we read just before the show began, was from a Kadima representative who basically said that, and we'll pull up and make it to the exact quote, but basically said that the human rights activists, along with the Africans, should all be put into the camps being built to house refugees. Coming through Israel. So, I mean, and some people are kind of frightened about this rhetoric, where it's going, and maybe, Jay Bernstein, let me get your take first, and we'll go around the room.
Well, thank you, Mark. The rhetoric is inexcusable, and I wouldn't say it's a flash in the pan. This is a serious problem, but I think we have to keep perspective and give it context. First of all, we're talking about a problem that exists because Israel, in fact, has opened its doors to a vulnerable population which has not been able to be assimilated in its own country and other Arab countries that it's passed through on its way to Israel. So we have this population in Israel because Israel has been, in a sense, welcoming to them. The problem here is that you know, Israel is caught in a situation where, even though it's allowed this population of refugees into the country, Israel, there's a great concern here that if the door is kept open, that Israel could be overwhelmed and it could cause a great strain to the country and a demographic crisis to the country as well. And I think a result of this has been this government policy of what some people would call it active ambivalence, where the problem has been allowed to fester. And it's not fair to the immigrants themselves, and it's not fair to the residents in the areas where they live, the Israeli residents as well. Now, a lot of nonprofits have stepped in and to try to deal with the situation, and that's really a credit to the Israeli population as well, that we have nonprofit volunteers and various organizations that are working with the immigrant population. But it is a problem that the government needs to deal with. In a way, I won't call it a good problem, but it's a testament to the fact that Israel has been, thank God, an economic success story, and people want to go there because they feel they can get a job there and better their lives. But, you know, it's a very, very small country, as we all know. The population is around 8 million, and the ability of the country to absorb vast numbers of people is limited. And for Israel, there's also a secondary concern, which is to maintain this is a Jewish state, and in order to not overwhelm the country demographically in a way that will alter the demographics of the country Jewishly, even though it's a Jewish state, of course, there's a large Arab population as well, but that is a concern. I think the government needs to deal with this problem. I'm happy to hear that the Netanyahu government has denounced some of the rhetoric, which it should. Violence is totally unacceptable. The government, I think, will deal with the problem. But this is a problem that many Western countries have. In that sense, Israel is no different than many countries, including this country, how to deal with these sorts of illegal immigrants. And I'm confident that Israel will solve this problem and be able to address it as it has addressed so many other challenges in its 60-some years of existence.
Jeff Baxter, go ahead, then we'll turn to Reverend Brown.
Thank you. So I want to underscore something that Jay was just alluding to, and that is the nature of multiple and partial truths and complexities. You know, the simplistic thinking in terms of absolutes and extremes, right and wrong, heroes and villains, winners and losers, saints and sinners. I would say black and white, but I'm afraid that is the case this time. That kind of thinking is not helpful. It serves to inflame rather than moderate. It serves war rather than peace. So I hope that we can underscore this notion that there are lots of sides to this story, first of all. It is reasonable to allow a sovereign government to think about its own defense and control of borders. And of course, there is a context of poverty and hardship, which breeds, as we know, its tensions and fears and insecurities and resentments. So having said all of that, now I can jump into my own reaction, which is, I'm sickened and pained and hurt, really, truly hurt. The inflammatory language of pogrom and cancer, you know, the accusations of left-wingers and all the rest, this is hurtful. And I'm mainly concerned with the general devaluation of democratic values and human rights commitments in Israel. The Israel, by the way, that I love and support and want to be proud of. But I am alienated from these kinds of things, and it generates a lot of angst, a lot of angst. You know, I've heard concern, I've heard condemnation in the organized Jewish community. I have not heard a great deal of outrage. You know, with the except of Rabbi David Saperstein of the Religious Action Committee, I guess it is, and Jeremy Ben-Ami of J Street, I have not heard great outrage, and that is what I'd like to speak to. And eventually, being that I have Rabbi in front of my name, I'd like to speak to Torah. So hopefully in the conversation, yeah, We'll get around to Torah.
Okay. Reverend Heber Brown.
Yeah, just very quickly, I appreciate the dialogue, and I agree with, as Rabbi Jeff talks about or speaks about, the complexities of the issue. And for a long time, at least from my vantage point, Israel is spoken of in mainstream media in a very simplistic way. There's a particular narrative that is promoted by mainstream media, and deviations from that narrative are sidelined, disregarded. And so I appreciate his sharing and my agreement with it's far more complex the nation of Israel and the issues that are there than what is normally offered up in the general public. I also have to say that I agree with others who have said this is not a flash in the pan. 2 years ago, when I was in Israel, I personally experienced racial discrimination in a group of 30 people. I was the only African-American in the group. And every stop, almost every stop we went to, I was the one pulled to the side, questioned and interrogated. I had to produce my passport most of the stops we went to. And much like Rabbi Jeff said, they were Jewish members of the delegation that I went with. And in seeing that I was going through that type of discrimination purely based on the color of my skin, and we know that because in the 30 people that was in my group, I was the only one who was regularly pulled, interrogated, questioned, and made to feel unwelcome. Why are you here was the regular question to me. And so this culture, this climate is there. And I had members of my delegation who were Jewish saying, this is not the Judaism that I embrace, that I love. And I appreciated that. I appreciated members of my delegation being able to see that injustice. And instead of acting like it didn't happen, saying, this is not true Judaism. Just like the same way, if a pastor commits some type of egregious error, and we have a number of those in the country right now, just because I'm a pastor, I'm not going to give license for behavior that is outside of what I understand to be the ethic of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so I'm thankful for raising up the complexity, but also speaking frankly about these challenges that are there. And I agree with Rabbi Jeff. It is quite alarming, not only the incident of the race riots against Africans there in Tel Aviv and in other parts of the country. There's other strategic decisions that are made. For example, African communities are forced to live in buffer zones, quote unquote, called. And so in between Palestinians and Israeli society, they might put an African community, and that creates complications of its own. But, you know, so these types of issues are present. And as your first guest was talking about Israel being welcoming, well, the challenge now is to see if it can be welcoming to all who are there and not just certain people.
Let me raise a couple of questions here. The phones are open, 410-319-8888. We'll come into those calls, and we're also going to hear a conversation we had earlier, a short one with Johannes Bayou, who's executive director of the African Refugee Development Center, who is himself an Ethiopian Christian who lives in Israel. Let's take things one at a time. First thing is, before we go, because one of the huge questions here is democracy and a Jewish state and what that means and how this plays into that. We have to wrestle with that one in a minute. But let me start somewhere else first. It leads into it in some senses. Right now, Kadima and Likud are in a coalition government, the largest government that has ever, the single largest majority in a government in Israel's history. And it was their representatives, some representatives from both parties were at those rallies and spoke about the cancer, spoke about Kadima representative speaking that about the camps need to be opened and human rights activists should go there as well as the African refugees need to be housed someplace. And then you have people like Attorney General Yehuda Weinstein, who said he supported the mass deportation of South Sudanese migrants if the investigation said they were not legally entitled to refuge. Likud, a member of parliament of the Knesset, Danny Danan, said that he wanted the immediate removal of African immigrants into population centers and have them placed in detention centers for their own security. And these are people who are part of the ruling government. So is this disturbing? Is this a minority of people in that government? Some would say not. I mean, Netanyahu has also said that we need to build detention centers. The riots were reprehensible, but we can't allow refugees coming into Israel across the border. Most of them, as you'll hear earlier, snuck into Israel through the Sinai and into Israel, through Egypt and then into Israel and then into South Tel Aviv. So, I mean, let's wrestle with this from this one part here. Is this something to worry about at that level? or not?
Well, if I may, Mark, again, a little bit of perspective. Here in the United States, we have a vigorous debate, robust debate regarding illegal immigrants as well. And there are people from all sides of the aisle and different perspectives regarding that issue. It's an issue in Europe as well. It's Israel, like other Western countries, which, like I said, are doing well economically, is now grappling with it as well. So I think we need to, first of all, remember that this is not a problem unique to Israel. It's a Western problem, and many countries are dealing with it. That doesn't excuse hateful rhetoric, but again, I think there is a tendency within the media to jump on those examples and to use them as a paradigm and to claim that somehow this is indicative of a wider problem of Israel. And I would very much contend that's not the case. I mean, Israel is a country, a multi-ethnic country. There are Jews of every shade and coloring and ethnicity in Israel. It is a Jewish state, but there were Ethiopian Jews, there were Asian Jews, and Israel has had a wide open policy for assimilating many, many people from different economic backgrounds. So are there individuals who are racist in Israel, just like there are individuals who are racist in the United States and elsewhere? Unfortunately, that's the case. We haven't yet reached messianic times. There's a lot of work still to be done. And that racism is reprehensible, and I agree with the rabbi that that's certainly contrary to the Torah Judaism that I believe in as well. And it's a challenge. But let's not get carried away and paint the entire country as being racist or undemocratic.
We have to take a short break. We'll come back to our other two guests. Also go to the phones. We have a number of people calling and get them on the air. We'll hear the voice of Johannes Bayou as well. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On the way back to a conversation, I'm going to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. If you are a first or second time home buyer looking for a home in Baltimore, there may be one here for you. 1-800-638-7781. We're talking about what happened in Israel last week. There was also attacks last night, firebombs thrown into a home of a Nigerian family, a daycare center. Had a bomb thrown into it. No kids were there then, but a bomb was thrown in it. Molotov cocktail. Those things just came over the wire. We are joined here by Jay Bernstein, radio talk show host for Shalom USA Radio, chair of the Baltimore Zionist District's Israel Advocacy Committee, the Reverend Heber Brown III, pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, and organizer of the African Heritage Delegation to Israel and Palestine, who has visited there with a different delegation before, Rabbi Jeff Basick, who is the rabbi here of Kol HaLev Congregation here in Baltimore. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And I read this to my other two guests in the studio. I think Jay may have heard it during the break, and I'll let Heber jump in. And Jeff, the thing that when we say who is saying these things and how dangerous is it or is not, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was warning about the influx of tens of thousands of Africans and was quoted as saying in the entire speech, threatening the fabric of Israeli society, its national security and national identity, and said the 60,000 infiltrators are liable to become 600,000 and lead to the eradication of Israel as a Jewish and a democratic state.
Yeah, I think it's if you listen to the language that's being used, and this is Benjamin Netanyahu saying this, calling African asylum seekers infiltrators, and that's loaded language. And I would push back against Mr. Bernstein a little bit, as he said before the break about being careful not to paint an entire country as being racist or undemocratic, and there are some individuals who might be racist. I push back there that when you have the prime minister and other members of the government saying these statements, participating in rallies that lead to the attack against African people, this is more than just individuals. We're talking about systemic issues now. When you talk about a detention facility being built, and I believe from everything I've read today, in a couple of months that facility will be finished, and then African asylum seekers will be placed in that facility. And I think your first interview of the hour, Mark, the interviewee was saying that it would be a work camp and African asylum seekers would be there. And so at least from the way that I'm seeing is, I'm not talking about individuals having racist attitudes. I'm talking about systemic issues that the government is supporting and participating in against a particular population. And as we talk about in the framework of Israel, we have to at least raise as well occupation and the type of climate that raises for Palestinians as well. And so I think it's a pushback a little bit from Mr. Bernstein not trying to minimize this into just a few individuals. No, you're talking about the prime minister. You're talking about elected officials. You're talking about systemic issues of discrimination that have to be engaged and addressed with the full support of those who know that that path is not the right path for a democratic country, if Israel is to be a democratic country.
Jay, do you want to respond before we turn to Jeff, and then we can go back to the phones here?
Well, real briefly, I mean, the Prime Minister has come out against all these violent acts that have occurred. His comment was not about doing anything or somehow retaliating against those who are now in the country.
That he called infiltrators.
His concern is, and you know, I don't want to speak for the Prime Minister, I don't work for him, but I think his concern is that Israel has got to get hold of its borders. It cannot allow its borders to remain open. There is a fence that, in fact, is being constructed right now along the Egyptian border because there is a limited absorptive capacity. There's security concerns as well. And there's a concern about changing the demographic nature of the country. And I think these are all legitimate concerns, just like they're legitimate concerns for the United States. It has to be implemented in a humane way. That is the challenge. And I agree with everyone that that's a very intense challenge for Israel. And I'm confident Israel will meet that challenge. But I certainly would disagree any suggestion that the prime minister is the head of a government that is trying to implement some sort of racist policy against any members of Israeli society.
It is true that we know better to allow the words and actions of a few to speak for the entire nation or people. We know that to be true. We know that lesson. We've learned it time and time again. To say something is systemic in Israel is to underscore something that is partially true, that there is a dynamic tension with a Jewish and democratic state. I mean, those two values can be in a dynamic tension. But I would offer to Pastor Brown that, you know, the other head of the government, I mean, Shimon Peres, right, a former president, is quoted as saying that hatred of foreigners contradicts the foundations of Judaism. So there are multiple sides to this story.
Definitely.
And I would really question this notion of this being some kind of innate character of the state of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
It is reprehensible, and we all have reprehensible aspects of our communities. Mm-hmm. Right.
If President Jimmy Carter said something today and President Barack Obama said a statement, there would be far more weight, as we would agree, behind President Obama. He said an issue of the same-sex marriage, he said that was his personal opinion, the statement that he made recently. Mm-hmm. Presidents don't have purely personal opinions. Every word you say is loaded politically. Mm-hmm. And so that's the lens I'm looking through with Benjamin Netanyahu. And when I say systemic, you speak, at least in some realm, on the government, and what you say has some power behind it. I'm not talking about anybody
No,
who,
you're right.
You know.
And the notion that Mark raised about the power of this particular government now.
Right.
With 90-some right. You know, votes in Knesset.
Mm. Which is it's the Israeli parliament.
It's an open question as to whether it will that power will be used for the good or for something detrimental. It is an open question. We are all waiting for that. You know, I want to say something else and turn the conversation a little bit towards the other aspect of Israel, which is the Jewish aspect. And I can speak to that. Can I do that now?
Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay. So I'm a big fan of Amos Oz, the novelist, who was once famously quoted as saying that the main issue facing Israel is not the borders of Israel, but the boundaries of Judaism. That is, its character, right? Its values and principles and visions and dreams. That's where my concern is. We need to see our values and ourselves reflected in this project, this Israel project. I'm sad, very sad to say that it is alienating you know, things like this and other strains of Israel is a bit alienating. We're supposed to be on the side of fighting intolerance, right? As Rabbi Saperstein said, this is shameful, right? We can look in the mirror and say, shame on us in this particular case, right? But to paint the whole country with the broad brushstroke of, founded on racism or something like that, I think goes a little bit too far.
And to follow up what the rabbi is saying, right now in Israel, the debate that you're having, Mark, now, that conversation is going on in Israel. It's a credit to the democratic nature of the country and the full free press in the country, where you just go online and you'll see the great conversation that's going on now. And to echo the rabbi, there are many, and I would venture to say, even though I'm not taking a poll, that a majority of Israelis are very concerned about what's going on and want the government to take control of the situation and to deal with the situation.
We are all pretty pretty anxious about this drift, though. And let's be honest and admit that there does seem to be a drift away from democratic values and human rights commitments.
But I think one of the things that I think that...
Well, I would not concede that point, but I think that's another conversation which I'll be happy to engage in. And I know there's been a lot of accusations and claims towards what the rabbi suggested, but I would not concede that point.
Let me go to the phones here, and I want to get people in the conversation. I'm one of my listeners now that I'm going to keep you all brief because we want to play a clip from Johannes Bayou, who runs the African Development Center in Tel Aviv. We need to hear his voice as one of the leader of the African refugees. So I'm not going to let you kind of spew on for days, and I apologize for that because we have limited time. Just to say that I think that what you all were saying, comment, we'll go right to the calls here, is that any time, though, the leader of a nation calls for camps.
Scary.
To put people in, that to me is a frightening, no matter how democratic the dialogue is, if it still happens. We had democratic dialogue in this country during segregation and slavery. So... That the question is, where does that democratic dialogue take us? And that's the question I think we have to be concerned about. Let's go first to Baba. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Baba. You're on the air. We don't have a brief time.
I heard you. Since Israel is on the continent of Africa, then Africans belong there. It's not in Europe where Netanyahu is not in Poland and it's not in Russia. And Netanyahu, just like Menachem Begin, is a bigot and a terrorist. Take care.
Thank you, Mike. Let's go to Baba. Thank you, Baba. Let's go to Mike. You're on the air.
Dean put his finger on it when he said, we're not yet in messianic times. Well, this has to do with the whole crux of the problem, whether there should be a jump start. Can you hear me?
Go ahead. There's a little feedback, but we can hear you.
That's another one.
Go ahead. Mike, go ahead.
Oh, so can you hear me all right now?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. This has to do with the very crux of the problem about whether there can be people streaming into Israel when they haven't yet taken on themselves the Seven Commandments, Noah, and they would what's called resident aliens, where they swear allegiance to the Israel as it is under God's commandments. And the one Oz that the rabbi may want to refer to, Amos, not Oz, is the one who is Isaiah, the son of Amos, where he says in Isaiah chapter 2, in the messianic time that Jay was alluding to, and it shall be at the end of days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be firmly established at the top of the mountains, and it shall be raised above the hills, and all the nations shall stream to it. So we are looking to the time when all the nations, including blacks from Africa, will stream to Israel and will be part of it.
Okay, so
that is
Mike,
in the
messianic
time.
What is the point? I said we only have so much time, so what is the point you're trying to make in a very succinctly, if you can do that? Mike?
Nature have brought this upon themselves. The double standards do apply to them because it can't be both. They're either Jewish state, any residents have to keep the seven commandments given to Noah, or they can't be there.
Okay, Mike, thank you for your call. And before we go to the next call, that is part of, before we hear the comments from who heads African Refugee Center, part of the crux of the question is...
An ethnic democracy, just by very definition, is a problematic, right? And we are teasing that out now, 60-some years after the State of Israel is formed.
And that's the reason why the State of Israel exists. It is an ethnic democracy, and it is a challenge. And Let's look around the Arab world and see how many other democracies there are of a similar nature. We know there's an experiment going on, but Israel, despite being a Jewish state, provides rights to 20% of its population who are Arabs and are not Jewish.
Who could not be prime minister?
So I think, you know, this is a challenge, but one that Israel has met and will continue to meet.
Mr. Jay, I think we have different definitions of what a democracy is, and at least an ethnic democracy, because as we said, as Mark just said, those Palestinians could never be prime minister of Israel. You know, there's different roads for Palestinians as opposed to others. I mean, so let's really live in the complexity of it. We don't have to create narratives that don't speak to the reality on the ground. I've been there. So on the ground, I've seen different roads for Israelis versus Palestinians. On the ground, I've seen Africans treated one way, black Africans, like the color of my skin, being treated in one way, and people, blacks and Israeli, pulling me to the side under hushed voice, telling me that as soon as they can get out, they're leaving. This is on the ground. And my only point is this, that we don't have to create a fairy tale about what's on the ground. You can sure speak to the vision of what you hope Israel one day to be, but at the first you got to deal with what's happening right now. And right now, it's not a democracy, at least in the definition that I study and know of.
I would never deny your personal experiences in Israel, but all I can say is that Israel is the national homeland of the Jewish people, and for individuals to promote policies that would result in that not occurring is in and of itself denying the right of ethnic determination of the Jewish people. And that's what the Jewish state is. And all these challenges certainly exist and are problematic.
And it's not a new challenge.
And are being met.
And Jay, I would remind you, it's not a new challenge. Torah speaks about kindness to strangers no less than 36 times. Some people say 46, but let's call it 36 times kindness to strangers. So to what do we attribute this unusual emphasis, right? 11th century commentator Rashi says, our collective memory, you know, of our own experience in Egypt, right?
Exactly. The collective memory of our exodus from Egypt means that we have a responsibility.
Right. So what about the collective memory of the 1930s? Let's hold that point for a second, right? We've been on the other side of the coin.
Absolutely right.
13th century, Nachmanides, as God helped us, so we should help the oppressed, right? That's the Judaism that I want to stand for. And whether they are Palestinian Arabs or foreign workers or African refugees, we should be on the side of fighting intolerance, right, and be authentically Jewish in that regard.
We are on that side. Israel is on that side. Does that mean that there will not be shortcomings, that there will not be failings, there will not be backsliding?
Right, I agree with you, of course.
Israel is a work in progress, but it will be achieved. We're not there yet. We're far from being there yet. Mm-hmm. But it concerns me when people suggest that Israel is a racist state, because what is implicit in that is that Israel should, its whole nature should be changed in such a way that in the end, it will not be the homeland of the Jewish people. It will not be a majority Jewish state. That's a non-Zionist argument. That's an anti-Zionist argument.
Right. But even within the Zionist camp,
let me just jump in here for a minute, because we can't play this whole clip, but I want to play part of it to hear some of the voice of Johannes Bayou, executive director of the African Refugees Development Center in Tel Aviv. We may only play part of it, but let's hear a little bit because we want to get back to our guests before the end of the hour. We're about to talk to Hage Matar, who is an Israeli journalist. We're about to have a conversation with Johannes Bayou, who is the leader of an organization in Tel Aviv where a riot took place against African people in South Tel Aviv, and he is director of the African Refugee Development Center. And Johannes, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Johannes, before we talk about this riot that took place against the African refugee community in South Tel Aviv, talk a bit about who the African refugees are that are in Israel, and the story of how so many of them got there, and how many are there.
Okay, currently, just we have close to 60,000 asylum seekers and refugees living in Israel. Most of them are arrived recently, the past 5 years, actually, because of the problem, what's going on in Egypt and in other areas. Their treatment is so bad, so they start stepping that and then coming to here. phenomena for Israel. Actually, the number is large because they came within a few years. But it's still, comparing to any other country, just the number is not that much big. However, Israel, since it doesn't have a refugee policy, Israel still just couldn't figure out just how to deal with the situation. So this makes the situation really bad, both for the society and for the asylum seekers and refugees in Israel. Most of asylum seekers and refugees are coming from Eritrea, Sudan, Darfur, Ethiopia, and other countries from Africa. Over 99% of them are coming from Africa in general. And after they got here, before even they come here, they going through a lot of difficulties on the way here, especially in the Sinai Desert by the smugglers. They, the smugglers are torturing them. Women are raping in that area, and all these things happening to them. And then after that, they managed to cross the border through Egypt. And after they got here, that's the problem. They get detained in prison for quite some time, and then the government release them. And the problem is here. When they release them, just they put them in the bus, they drive them to Tel Aviv, in South Tel Aviv mainly. And then people are concentrated in that area because since government are not supporting them, they support each other. So that's why that area is... a lot of refugees are concentrated in that one.
Now, most of the African refugees are not given the status in Israel of asylum seeker or of any kind of protection because they are seen with refugee status. Most Africans have not been given that, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Look, this is a tricky thing. Since the establishment of Israel, 64 years, only 132 refugees are recognized as a refugee by the convention, by the international convention. Only 132. That's it. And we're talking about today's 60,000 asylum seekers and refugees. The government providing them a protection paper, which says they are undeportable. They cannot go back to their countries, which means government, the state of Israel, recognizes that these people will face danger if they go back. The problem is they don't provide them a proper document for them to work and support themselves. Or the government doesn't give them any kind of support. This is a problem now. Because Israel, as I said, just doesn't have refugee policies, that makes situation very, very difficult for everyone involved in this case.
So there's more of that interview. You can hear it up on our website at steinershow.org. We'll play the whole thing there. You can hear it there. Also, the entire interview we did with Hage Matar will be up there. We want to come back to our guests to have some responses with what we heard and, what this may portend. I do want to try to get one or two callers in here again before the end of the hour. But, gentlemen, your response to what you heard, at least a part of our interview with Johannes Bayer.
Well, I think that it's very important first to hear directly from Africans there, even with your listeners listening to me today. Don't take my word for it. Listen directly to someone on the ground. So I'm thankful for the interview. And when he talks about 132 provided asylum status out of 50,000, I think I heard, you really get a sense of some of the challenges there. And then at the same time, the Israeli government calling the rest or categorizing the rest of them as undeportable. So you can't go back because of dangers you experience, but at the same time not giving work visas. So this limbo. So now I can't go back, but I can't work here. What are you expecting, or what type of life are we really expecting of this population that's in this status there?
I often want to ask fellow Jews, what Torah do you read from? And what rabbinic commentaries over 2,000 years do you read? Because Ger Toshav, the stranger that dwells among us, the resident alien, has always been an honored and protected position. It's a good status. So I ask my, you know, fellow Jews in Israel, what Torah are you reading from? And I want to point out the irony of something. This neighborhood where this tension is bubbling over in South Tel Aviv is called Hatikva, which is the hope.
The hope.
And how ironic is that? That people are seeking hope and opportunity in a working economy from a, you know, a dysfunctional, you know, region of West Africa. And here we are squashing that hope, right? So, yes, there are legitimate concerns for the control and defense of borders and the infiltration of whatever you want to call it, if that's the word that you want to use. There are legitimate concerns. But this is a Jewish state founded on these visions and dreams and, dare I say, hopes. Hatikva.
I guess my final comment, I won't repeat myself, but Israel is now dealing with a problem that America has been dealing with for a long time. And America is a much bigger country than Israel and still hasn't found a solution. But hopefully we will, and I think Israel will as well. What the rabbi had to say, I agree with 100%. And the principles that are so dear to the rabbi are dear to me as well and need to be in the forefront of how Israel deals with the problem. But this is a new problem. This is a problem that's occurred in the past couple of years, and it may take some time to figure out and determine. But we need to be concerned about it and to follow it, but let's not jump to conclusions. Let's not be ready to say that Israel is no longer democratic, that we've got an epidemic of racism of Israel because of one incident or even several incidents. We Israelis are people like anyone else. They have their flaws, and this problem will be dealt with, but it is not a reason to demonize the Jewish state. It's not a reason to delegitimize the Zionist venture and project that's still ongoing. And this problem will be dealt with in an appropriate way, in a way that honors the humanity of the individuals involved. But Israel needs to get control of its borders, just like the United States does as well. And it's unfair to the citizens. It's unfair to the immigrants themselves. The government needs to do more. I agree with that 100%. And I also agree and would conclude by saying that any sort of racist rhetoric by members of Knesset or anyone is inappropriate, anti-Jewish, and should be condemned.
My final comment, Mark, first, thanks so much for the conversation. I pray it continues, the complexity of the conversation continues as well. And I would say as well that you don't have to be anti-United States or anti-American to acknowledge that the enslavement of African people is a part of the national story. You don't have to be. All you have to do is be able to look at it, do the facts and say that, and you wouldn't be necessarily anti-American for saying that. At the same time, to acknowledge some of the challenges that are in Israel right now, to talk about occupation, to talk about Palestinians, to talk about Africans in the country, you don't have to demonize Israel. You don't have to say that Israel should be blown off the map or whatever. You just have to look at the facts on the ground and say, this is what's happening. Now, you might not like what you see. But before you can move to addressing the issues, and yes, America has a long way to go in these same similar racial discrimination, systemic injustices, not just individuals saying bad words to each other, but systemic injustices and empowered prejudices. America has a long way to go, but Israel as well has a long way to go. I think with Baltimore having the great number and the very influential Jewish community that it does, this is a prime opportunity, I believe, at least in part, for the Jewish community of Baltimore to continue this dialogue. And when we talk about solidarity with black folks, and we've had this conversation before, Mark, I think this is one of the issues that when African people are being attacked in Israel, this is a prime opportunity for us to really show solidarity and coming together, even here in Baltimore, on that issue.
We are plumb out of time. I apologize to the listeners who did not get through, Darren, Leo, Mike, and some others who couldn't get through. It's been a very intense discussion, trying to play clips from over in Israel as well. I want to thank Jay Bernstein for joining us, who is radio talk show host, Shalom USA Radio, Reverend Heber Brown, pastor of Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, and Rabbi Jeff Basick, rabbi at the Kol Halev Congregation.
Glad
thank you all so
here.
Much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you all. We're going to take a short break and come back and switch gears and come back to Baltimore, Annapolis and see what's happening in a political landscape here for the next hour. Stay with us.